This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Happy Monday and welcome to another season of I Could Never Be Here on the Popcorn Talk, season 5. It's incredible. I was looking the other day at the number of guests that we've had in and the number of stories that we've told and just the amount of inspiration, which is incredibly just uplifting. And that's all that this show is about. We want to be able to inspire you, be able to give you that encouragement on your walk, whether it's professional or whether it's personal, just by sharing the stories of the people that you see on TV, the people that you maybe go to their concert, the people that you see in a magazine, wherever, and you think to yourself, man, I could never be this person because maybe they knew someone or maybe they had money, but that little voice in the back of your head is lying to you and you can accomplish those things. And we share the stories of people who have done just that. And today is no different. Such an incredible guest coming in and we're able to talk to him. But first, I always begin each show with some advice for a better life. And today's advice for better life is that rushing through the present will leave you in a future that you are not prepared for. Oftentimes, when we're in a situation in life where we're maybe not happy, or maybe we want things to be able to go faster, and we're like, man, how can I get out of this? How can I just get rid of everything that's going on and be able to get to that next stage in life? But the issue is that if you get to that next stage too quickly and don't learn from the situation you're in, you're not prepared. So be able to just take your time, be able to embrace today, embrace the surroundings, because there's a reason that you're in the situation, and that will prepare you for the future that you will be in. Again, today's guest, I'm so excited to talk with him. He is a very funny actor. He has starred in Deadpool, Office, Christmas Party, Ghostbusters, is currently starring in TBS's Miracle Workers, which is a hilarious show. But he actually grew up half a world away here from Los Angeles. Such an incredible story. It's amazing what he's accomplished. Please welcome Karan Soni. Karan, hey. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was so nice of you. Thank you.
Well, of course. Again, we were talking before the show, and it's just I admire so much of what you did. Especially, I mean, you've taken a lot of risks.
Yeah.
In your life. And, you know, some have paid off. A lot of that people know of it paid off, but I'm sure there's ones that haven't, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. I know it's really weird to do any of this stuff because you're forced back to reflect on things. And, yeah, it's wild.
Well, let's first reflect on Miracle Workers.
Yeah.
Because this is the show you're in right now. It's mm-hmm. Tuesday nights on TBS.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, if you're watching this live, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, is episode 4. In this show, I love this show.
Thank you.
I was watching it, and it's just, it's such an interesting dynamic from, like, what you expect. So for people who don't know Miracle Workers, Steve Buscemi plays God, mm-hmm. and he's like, well, I think I'm just going to destroy Earth.
Yeah.
And the angels are like, wait,
yeah.
let's put a pause on that. And he said, I'll give you 2 weeks
yeah.
to be able to, you know, accomplish an impossible task.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then I'll save Earth. And you're God's assistant in that.
Yeah, I play the archangel, or in this world, God's right-hand man. The creator of the show, Simon Rich, I was a big fan of his. He wrote on SNL for many, many years and created the show Man Seeking Woman and has published all these amazing books. And his version of heaven or the afterlife or whatever you want to call it was basically a corporation that was badly run because in his mind, there's so many like sad things that happen to us randomly on Earth where you one day find out you have cancer or something. And it just all kind of seems like overwhelming, mm-hmm. like the randomness of being a human being.
Did this fall through the cracks somewhere? Yeah.
Yeah. So his idea was like, what if God is just like us? He's just a human being who has flaws and he created this planet and he doesn't know how to run it. And so the idea of the show is very much a satire of like a corporation versus like religion or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like if everything that happened on our planet was these people are just trying their best up there also, but they mm-hmm. have their own issues and stuff that gets in the way. So yeah, it's like a really fun, silly show.
Yes, the dynamic that you think of like, oh, heaven is perfect. Everything is flowing very well. And then you're watching this and like, it's not that you don't want to be angry, but it's like, wait, what is going on? Like, this shouldn't be happening.
I know, but that's stuff that happens on our planet all the time too, and you kind of get frustrated. We don't have answers for it, and so that's his kind of version of that is just this crazy world that he's created where God is a CEO and and stuff like that. So yeah, it's really fun. It was a lot of fun to make this show.
I was gonna say the dynamic, obviously you have you have Steve Buscemi, Daniel Radcliffe is in it.
That's crazy I'm a big Harry Potter fan, so.
Yeah, I saw there was a photo on your Instagram, I think, of you wearing a Harry Potter t-shirt.
I mean, I have so much Harry Potter. I have like wands. I have Hermione's wand that I spend way too much money on. I mean, I have all this stuff. Yeah, I grew up loving the books first and mm-hmm. foremost. Like, they're huge in India, as they are, I'm sure, everywhere around the world. And everyone in my class was reading.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
It, I got into the books like after the third or fourth book had been published and just like powered through it. And it's actually the first thing I read for pleasure because everything I didn't like reading mm-hmm. before that, mm-hmm. which I think is also true of a lot of Harry Potter fans. Because I had to do reading for school and then I just never liked it. And then I read those books and I began reading for fun through those books. And so they mean like a lot to me. And then obviously I've seen the movies many, many mm-hmm. times. So the fact that I got to work with him and now I'm friends with him, it's very crazy.
Does that ever come up, like when you like idolize someone and mm-hmm. then you work with him? Does he know?
Oh, yeah. And the great thing about him is that he's very open to talk about Harry Potter like, with anyone and everyone, because he just has embraced that it's like so beloved. And so, I mean, I brought it up like the first day we started filming, and
don't even try to play it cool and like wait till day three and be like, by the way, I kind of watched the movies. Like,
No, I brought it up, and then what was amazing was the movies had just come out on HBO Go or Now, mm-hmm. and so every Sunday when we were filming in Atlanta, I watched a movie, and then on Monday I came in with a list of questions of how did you film this, and how did that happen, and how many days did that take, and all these like kind of geeky movie questions, and he answered every single one, and he's never not answered one, and then he told me some like behind the scenes stuff, and so anyways, it was a true dream because he was completely willing to talk about it, and he always is willing to talk about it. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. That's just great. And what is the dynamic like on set between everyone who is, again, because this is such a unique environment for a show of it being heaven, but like embracing the flaws.
Yeah. The dynamic was just really fun because the show, the world of it is very, very fun. We kind of had this like absolutely amazing set that they put a lot of work into that they built. Mm-hmm. So we just got to go to this one place and like play all day and then leave every day. So it was really, really fun. And we shot in Atlanta. So the food is really good there. We went out for all these like nice dinners and it was like a very dreamy situation where everyone got along great. So
it's counting down now. So it was 2 weeks and then even like the name of the episode, you're like 2 weeks, like 13 days, 12 days. And then
now it's 6 days tomorrow.
Six days.
Yeah. And then it's going to get down to the minutes or hours or minutes.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it gets down to the wire. Yeah. And the cool thing about it is limited series, so it's an anthology. So at the end of the season, the story is finished. So whatever, it's like there's no cliffhangers. It's like a very clean end to this particular story. So that's really satisfying too. It's like a 3.5-hour movie. So we had all the scripts before we started, so we kind of knew exactly, you know, what the arc of all the characters was, and And yeah, so it was really fun.
Your character in this is very similar, I think, to other characters that you played a little bit, you know, similar to Deadpool and other ones, where you're almost quirky and like you're bringing things up. Like, yeah. Do you enjoy that kind of character, or you feel like that's just one that you get cast to play?
Yeah, I enjoy that kind of stuff. Anyone who's like a little bit weird and off is very mm-hmm. fun for me, because I'm not like that in real life. So I'm like very kind of organized and like nerdy. And so for me to get to like do something like weird and characters that would make like risky decisions, like being Deadpool's friend or mm-hmm. like, you know, going against God or any of these things, that's like what I love about acting, because I can pretend to do all these things, but in real life I would never other than the risk of being in this business, I haven't really taken a lot of like huge risks. Mm-hmm. I'm not like investing in any startups or anything. So yeah, that's always like really fun.
And you said that you have some movie posters at your house from ones that you've been in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I always try to keep movie posters from like studio movies that I've been in, because I always feel like it's exciting. I that was something that I always kind of wanted in the beginning, but it seemed really impossible to get to be in like a big movie. And mm-hmm. so every time I do get cast in one, I feel like keeping a poster of it is just like a nice reminder to be like, don't take this for granted. Like, there was a time when you thought you were never going to be in a big movie, so yeah, it's that collection is slowly growing, so it's really
and now
nice.
You're in six movies this year.
This year, six movies. Six. Yes. So in April, I'm in this movie called Unicorn Store on Netflix that mm-hmm. Brie Larson directed. I got to work with her and Bradley Whitford and Joan Cusack. It was amazing. That comes out on Netflix, and then in May, I'm in Detective Pikachu with Ryan again, mm-hmm. And that I think comes out May 10th, and then. Also, another Netflix movie with Randall Park and Ali Wong. That was mm-hmm. a romantic comedy that they wrote, which was really fun. And then in June, I did a movie with Tiffany Haddish and Rose Byrne and Salma Hayek called Limited Partners. That's from Paramount. That comes out June 28th. And then I had a movie at Sundance called Corporate Animals mm-hmm. with Demi Moore, Ed Helms, Jessica Williams. That comes out sometime in the summer, too. We just sold, so they're trying to figure out the release thing, but sometime in the summer. And then I did a movie with Melissa McCarthy called Superintelligence for Warner Brothers that her husband directed. And I believe that's
in the
fall.
You were also in with Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I know. So I got to work with her again, which is...
Is that nice? I mean, working with her again, or like working with Ryan again, is it a different dynamic of being with them on a different set?
I'm still starstruck. So I was still starstruck, and I still get, for like maybe 5 minutes, I'll be like, oh, this is fine. And then I'll be like, this is really crazy. I still, because they're just, I admire like their talent a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm always just in awe of when they start working. I'm just like, they're really good at what they do. So mm-hmm. it's always like nice. Yeah.
Are you trying to pick things up from them, or be, you know, you ask a lot of questions to Daniel about Harry Potter, but are you trying to pick things up acting wise from them, or whether that's just looking, or whether that's
it's more just looking, because it's really hard, because I feel very awkward like bringing up like talking about acting, because I don't really like talking about it, because it's very personal for everyone, like what mm-hmm. you kind of do and what you connect with. But it's more so just little things, like I try to pick up like how they treat people, because I think if people are working a lot, you just see these common traits that they're kind to the crew and they are prepared mm-hmm. and all of those things, which you just try to keep reminding yourself no matter how successful you are, that you still do work and like come in and
you still put
nice...
your pants on one leg at a time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's more so just like work ethic stuff than like specific, like how do you learn your lines or anything. But I did help, not to brag, but I did help Daniel a little bit on our show. He taught me a red carpet pose, because I'm very uncomfortable still doing that stuff, which is the broken finger, which when you're standing, just do like this, because I never know what to do with my hands. So you just hold your finger like this, and you'll see he does it. Sorry, Daniel. He does it in every photo. It's broken finger, or like just kind of hold your hand like this, and it really works for guys.
Have you used it?
Oh, yeah. There's like... a lot of broken fingers, since you can track it from when I film Miracle Workers to all my broken finger situation, or just my hand. I'm just doing holding fingers and hands. And then I taught him a little drunk acting trick that someone else taught me, but there's episode 5. I think his character has to be like completely drunk. Like, God comes up with a new cocktail for his restaurant mm-hmm. on the show, yep. which is a crazy sentence. But he calls them shocktails, because you're shocked by how much alcohol is in them. And Daniel's character just ends up drinking all three that were meant for me, Geraldine, and him. And he just progressively gets drunker because he's very nervous. And so he had to be like really, really drunk. And it's really hard to, you know, play drunk. And yep. And so one of the tricks that someone had taught me, but it's kind of an acting thing that I'm surprised hadn't heard of, is you just, as they're rolling and they haven't said action, you just spin in a circle really fast in the same spot. And then as soon as they say action, you stop. So you've done it for about 20 to 30 seconds. And you honestly feel completely drunk. Like, you're just, you can't.
Your you're body dizzy. Equilibrium.
Yeah, so just, like, naturally you just get into, like, physically, like, what it's like to be drunk. So he just did that for a whole week. Just was spinning around. But it works. Yeah.
Wow. And that's, I mean, it's incredible to be able to hear everything that you're doing right now. Because no, as we're going to talk about, like, where you came from, and you just, you literally picked up your life and moved halfway around the world.
Yeah.
I want to be able to shout out, though, first, for people, your social media, at It's Karin Soni on Instagram,
right. Yeah.
And on Twitter. And yeah. Certainly, again, Popcorn Talk. We're so grateful to be here at the Popcorn Talk on Instagram and on Twitter. And at The Only MC, you can follow me. And we're live here every single Monday. And we're also available on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. And we'd love to be able to have you rate it. Give it 5 stars, put a comment on there, be able to share it with your friends. We give it to you for free. We just want to be able to help inspire. You know, that's what it's all about. We want to be able to inspire, be able to encourage. So go out, be able to be that blessing. But getting, you know, to look at where you came from. You grew up in New Delhi.
That's right. Yeah, born and bred.
And yeah. Ever any thought that you would leave India when you were growing up?
Yeah, it's kind of normal. Like, it's weird in India, the high schools are very good. And okay. Then the colleges are not as good. I feel like it's the opposite in America, where yep. like high school is kind of iffy, but college is, you know, what you're mm-hmm. kind of aiming for. So there it's reversed for whatever reason. So a lot of Indian kids go to college in the UK or US and then come back. And so I always kind of had a plan that I would go either to the UK or to the US. So I switched to an international school in Delhi when I was a freshman in high school. And that was kind of always the plan, but never to come to LA or any of that stuff. Yeah.
And you initially applied, I think, UC. I tried to get in.
Yeah, I basically... my college advisor and my parents and everyone wanted me to go on the East Coast because the flight is shorter or mm-hmm. the flights are shorter. So it just felt like not as far away from home. And but then at the time, the OC was on the air here, but it didn't.
REI Co-op has everything for camping, glamping, scampering, and whatever they're doing.
Cannonball!
Relaxing, axing, waxing.
I'm sorry, what?
REI waxes your skis, man.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Okay.
Biking, hiking, and whatever outdoor thing rhymes with hiking. You get it. REI Co-op is the place for gear, clothing, classes, and advice. For the million and one ways to opt outside.
Come on the air there, but we had the first two DVDs on a box set that would be passed around our high school, like, you know, the most sacred thing that mm-hmm. ever was. And we had watched every episode over and over, and we're just fascinated by Orange County and this world and yeah. California. And so I just decided to apply to a bunch of California schools. And I secretly really wanted to go to UC Irvine because on Google Maps it was by Newport Beach, which, if you know the show, I mean, truly, I just wanted to go to Newport Beach. And so I didn't get in because they're state schools. They take very few international yeah. students, but my grades were really good. But then I ended up getting into USC, which is where I went. And
which is like, if anyone in the U.S. would be like, oh, yeah. didn't get into Irvine, but got into USC, I suppose.
I know. And I, at the time, I was like, damn, this sucks. And then the first week I got to USC, people were like, you know who Josh Schwartz is, right? He's like the creator. He went to USC. And I was like, oh. And they were like, you know, they filmed in Manhattan Beach. They didn't actually, there's nothing films. And I was like, Manhattan Beach, that's in L.A. And then actually season 3 or 4, when some character goes to Brown, USC was Brown on the show because yeah. they filmed in LA. So it was just like, I recognized all the locations and, you know. So
it was meant to be.
I was happy after that week of realizing that I was pretty close to the OC.
But like you didn't even want to act in high school.
No, yeah.
It was just, you were not as good at science.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. I guess I've been talking about this. Yeah, my school required us to take like a science course and arts was a part of it also. But if you didn't want to take arts, you could double up on science. So like every Indian kid, like our parents were like, you're not going to take an art class. So they were like, you take, you know, another science or whatever. So I was doing chemistry and physics, I think. And I was doing really badly in chemistry. And then my teacher just, you know, brought my parents in and was like, listen, it's not meant for him. Like his entire GPA is going to go down. So they were like, he really needs to not take a second science class. So I switched to drama, which was the only thing that would fit in my schedule. But at the time, I was getting bullied a lot in the school, and I didn't have any friends. And all the popular guys who bullied me, their girlfriends were in the drama class. So I was just terrified of these people in general. And so I was just in this class with, like, these three stoner guys and then these 12 girls that all wanted to go to Bollywood and were, like, all about acting. And so I did this for a year and a half, and at the end of the year and a half, you have to put up a play as part of the course, and the play gets sent to England to be judged, and it's like 50% of your grade. And a cast list just came out. We didn't have to audition, and I got the lead because out of the four guys, I was like the nerdiest one. So the teacher was like, at least I know you can learn these lines, because it was a lot of lines. And I went up to her and I was like, I don't want to do this. Just give me like one of the side parts. And she was like, I can't have a play with all these male characters and not have one of the men in my class like play one of them. I can't have every woman cross-dress in the show. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'm doing this. And then I kind of got thrust into it. And after that play happened, all the popular kids came to see it because their girlfriends were in it. And then they became friends with me because they thought I was funny in it. And I didn't even know what I was doing to be funny. But they were like, you're funny. So they were like, you're cool now. And so then I just kept doing theater in school just to survive because I didn't play sports. So
did you enjoy it?
I was always stressed kind of doing it, but then to be honest, I enjoyed the attention after because it made me like stay cool because otherwise I was just getting bullied.
So it means to an end.
Yeah, so they were just like, when's your next show, bro? And I'd be like, damn it, I have to do another one. Like, I can't we just live off my last performance, which we talked about for 30 minutes. So it was just more so I was just like doing it to kind of stay afloat, and then I never really thought about it as a career or anything. And then when I came to college, I was going to study business, and then I just got really, like, I just wasn't enjoying any of my classes, and people kept saying it was because I was homesick, and I was like, no, LA's awesome. USC is so cool. This place is amazing. I was like, it's not that. And then I think people were like, maybe you need to take, like, an elective, and I didn't know what that was, because we don't have that in Indian schools, and they're like, you can take a class for fun. So I took drama 101 or whatever it was called, and right away I made friends instantly. Like, I was having a really hard time making friends in my other classes, and I just got along with everyone, and I was like, oh no, I think this is more than like a hobby or whatever I thought it was.
Was it really oh no?
Yeah, because I was like, how am I going to explain this to my parents? It doesn't fit as part of this master plan of me being like a CEO someday, or I don't know what they wanted me to do. So it became this whole thing of, I was like, I had this whole life plan, and now I've seen another side, and I have to now somehow go back or move forward, or I didn't know what to do. So
how did they react?
Well,
did you tell them over the phone, or did you wait in person?
No, I waited because I didn't have to declare a major until my end of sophomore year. So I just kept taking drama classes as electives. And then, you know, eventually my advisor was at USC was like, you have to declare this as your major, otherwise, or a minor or something. Otherwise, this is all gone to waste if you don't, you know, get credit for it. And so, that's when I had to have the conversation with my parents, and they were, like, I think concerned, but not like in a horrible way. They weren't like, absolutely not, we'll disown you. But they were just like, how much does this pay? And I think that was like the best thing they could have, the best reaction, because up until that point, I was just like living in a bubble kind of. And I didn't really know what the practical side is of like wanting to pursue like a career in entertainment. And it really forced me to be like, you know what, let me do some research and I'll come back to you and I'll show you that I can, you know, maybe do this as like a living. And then at the time, a lot of child actors went to USC who decided to take a break and then go to college. And so I just interviewed a bunch of my friends and I was like, tell me everything. Like, how do you pay your bills? Like, how does SAG work? All this stuff. So I, over one summer, just like educated myself on all of that and ended up doing a send out and sending my headshot to like hundreds of agents, and one person signed me. And so I went back to my parents and I'm like, I have an agent. I know like I'm going to start going on auditions while I'm still in school. So I had 2 years left of school. And I was like, I'm going to, you know, start like trying to get a paycheck before, that was my goal, to get like a paycheck before I graduated so I could show them that I have like some money that I made. And so that kind of, it was good because that reaction forced me to not just be in this like college, like blissful ignorance bubble of like just being creative and cool, but also like a little bit practical. So
was it easier, harder? What were your expectations of trying to land?
It was
a
lot harder because everyone kept saying that you'll get rejected and this and that. And I was completely like, everyone, I think, goes like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But secretly,
everyone else will get rejected.
Yeah. And inside you kind of feel like you're like, but I'll be the one who won't get rejected. So then, you know, when that stuff starts happening, it just over time, it just really affects you, because I didn't get my first job until a year and a half of auditioning once a week minimum. So
wow.
Let's say like 70 auditions. So at a certain point I was missing classes. It was a really, really weird time because I was missing classes. So my grades were going down. All my friends in college were just committing to being in school. They didn't really have agents. So they would always like help me run lines, and they'd be like, you have another audition this week. They're like, another one you didn't get. And it just didn't really help, because, you know, they weren't trying themselves, but I was the one example for everyone, and I was failing constantly. So I kind of felt like I don't even deserve to be going on auditions because I'm doing so badly. And I really thought my agent was just going to drop me because I just kept not getting anything. Mm-hmm. And then I finally got a job, which was a TV movie for MTV called Worst Prom Ever. And everyone kept saying that when you work, it's worth it. Like, all the rejection and everything is worth it because, like, you get to, like, work and it's amazing. And this job ended up being, like, a horrible nightmare. It was filming in New Orleans. And at the time, my agent, because I hadn't booked anything, he booked me as a local hire, which basically means that
you have to front everything.
Yeah, I have to pay for the flight and the hotel. And because my role wasn't big enough and the budget wasn't there for them to fly me, but they really liked me. So they're like, if he's willing to work, you know, by flying himself out and staying, you know, in a motel, then we'll pay him the $500 a day for 3 days to do this part or whatever. And so I didn't know any of that because they didn't really teach us in college. So he just said, you book this job. Here's like some flights you can book, and here's a hotel. And I was like, great, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I have to fly myself out to go to work or whatever. And so I just went to this thing, and the entire thing was 3 night shoots, which I didn't know what a night shoot was. I'm like a morning person. Mm-hmm. So for me to stay up all night, that's like still a problem. So I had a 5 p.m. call. The first night I stayed there till 4 in the morning, and they didn't use me. And I had a, it was 2009, I had a flip phone. No, iPads weren't a thing, so I didn't bring a book because I thought, I'm going to work.
Yeah.
I don't need all this. And I was in a honey wagon, which is the smallest trailer you can have, and mine was next to the porta potty, so it smelled like shit the entire night. And I didn't go to sleep because I was like, I have to be alert.
You never know.
So I stayed up all night, and that morning I didn't, you know, woke up early because I was like, had nerves. And so I basically stayed up for 24 hours and was miserable and didn't work. Second night, I was there again from 5 to maybe 5 in the morning. They didn't use me. And then third night, I was there from 5 p.m. And then maybe at 1 in the morning, they knocked on my door and they shot all my stuff in 45 minutes because I wasn't an important part of it. And so it didn't feel satisfying. I got one take per scene or setup or whatever. And I left and I was kind of like, it's really not worth it if this is what it is. And I'd missed my midterms to do this movie, and the whole thing had just messed up my college thing. So basically, I was kind of getting ready to quit before graduating college because I honestly thought it was too much. Like, it was a lot harder.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Sound the gifting panic alarm. You need to get an amazing gift. Wait, no, the perfect gift. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
Harder than I thought it was going to be, yeah.
What do you tell yourself? You know, you said you went on like 70 auditions and it was like nothing. What do you tell yourself after like audition 10 or 15 or 20? Like, what keeps you going?
I think in those beginning times, it was because that stuff keeps changing, like the motivation to keep getting rejected. But in the beginning, it honestly was just, I was just so excited that an agent wanted to work with me that I was like, I will make sure I'm on time and I'll know all the lines and all this stuff. And you know, I cried in my car a bunch and like you do all this stuff, but then you just like push it aside and you're like, whatever, at least I have like this opportunity or whatever, and you're just really kind of like going for it. But it was really after doing that first job that I couldn't muster up the courage to get rejected over and over. I was getting very jaded because it just didn't feel worth it because that experience was kind of horrible. And so,
how long were you auditioning after that role until you got your next one?
Yeah, so that was kind of divine intervention or whatever you want to call it, because I was ready to quit. After graduating, I was going to call my agent and be like, you know what, I'm really done. I'm going to try to get, like, because I was interning over the summers at, like, a film production company, and I thought I would still be in the business, but I would just be on behind the scenes, because I just loved the, like, movies and TV so much, and I was like, that's even a dream life, like, you know what I mean, to even be in it in any way. And they had kind of softly offered me, like, a full-time assistant position at this, like, very small production company. So I was like, this will be great. My parents will come for graduation. I'll give them the best gift, which is that I'm quitting this crazy thing. And I'm
I have a job.
A 9-to-5, like, job or whatever. And so that was, like, in my head, the plan. But, you know, I was just going to tell my agent when I graduated in May. And he was still sending me auditions. I was still getting rejected kind of week after week. And then there was this one movie, Safety Not Guaranteed, which was, like, my next job that I went in for maybe 5 times. And so 4 times, you know, I just kept going for these callbacks and they just weren't, like, picking me. And then I had this one final audition about 3 days before we had to start filming this movie, which is, like, really crazy. And I got it finally after, like, 5 auditions. And that was, the movie was filming, like, the first week of May in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So I had to leave college to go film this movie. So, you know, I turned it down because in my head I was like, I'm done. Like, this is, like,
this is not a
thing. And then the director had to call me and be like, this is a huge mistake. Like, don't do this. So then he convinced me. And then I basically, it was like the universe was like, make a decision. Like, either you're going to graduate in 2 weeks or you're going to leave for a month and film this independent movie that no one's maybe going to see. And then you've just thrown aside, like, all these kind of plans that you had. So I just kind of went with that thing of filming this movie, and luckily that movie went to Sundance and it became, like, a big thing there, and it came
That was your breakout. With you had Aubrey Plaza, you had Jake Johnson in there,
Mark Duplass, like, all still my friends, and yeah, so it was, it ended up being, like, what a rare experience, because I've done so many independent movies since then that are pretty bad, because you just don't, no one tries to make a bad movie, but they just sometimes don't end up as, like, that's still one of my favorite things that I've ever been in, and it was just luck, it was just random luck that that one ended up being a special project, because there's so many smaller movies that get made, and for whatever reason, they don't turn out that good, so yeah, that kind of was, like, my whole plan was to be done in 2 weeks, literally, and then this thing came up, and it, because it was in Seattle, I had to leave everything and go do this thing, and I just made the decision to, like, take that leap.
And that's obviously catapulted you into doing, you know, countless projects like we talked about at the start.
Yeah.
Do you ever look at, like, what would have happened if you didn't take this? Of, like, you maybe still gone the production route.
Yeah.
But how would that have played out, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think I would have been as happy as I am doing this, because this is kind of the thing that does make me the happiest. And what's cool about acting is that I can still go down the production side later in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to act for the rest of my life, because now I have so much experience on set, and I read so many scripts, and I just have all this kind of knowledge that I can, you know, I would love to produce someday and do all that kind of stuff. So what's cool about acting is that those doors are still open, versus if I think I would have gone into production and then missed this life, then I would have maybe missed a lot of these pivotal years where you can work a lot and stuff. So I feel, you know, I mean, it's every time I'm, like, doubting it still, I remember, like, that moment that was so clear that if I didn't have that opportunity, I would have not been doing any of this stuff. So,
and you just think, like, you don't know what could happen in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's really, crazy. Yeah.
What do your parents say now?
They're super supportive now. Like, maybe a little bit, maybe a little bit too supportive. No, they are just, like, the, you know, what you would ideally want, which is, like, anyone they meet on a plane. I mean, the recurring stories on Twitter, people will just be like, sitting next to your mom on the plane, she's really proud of you, just some random stranger. Because my mom will just lean in and be like, do you know what Deadpool is? And they'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, my son is in Deadpool. And they'll be like, what? And they don't believe her. Then just to pull up these photos and... it's just a whole thing. Like, she just loves to do it. But it's great, because it's I'd much rather have that than not have their support. But yeah, every movie that I'm in that comes out or whatever it is, they take, like, 25, 30 people in their town to the theater. Wow. They buy out whatever, as many seats as they can, and they're very supportive of all
that's
that
fantastic
stuff. Yeah, so it's great.
That's awesome. That is, yeah, it's incredible. Do you have a thing for, like, every role that you get of how you approach it? Or do you approach it differently? Or are there some things where you're like, all right, here's my checklist, whether it's mentally or physically, of like, yeah. You need to do this, and do this, and do this.
Yeah, it's mainly, it's kind of a little bit different for each thing, but mainly, I just, it's very boring, but it's just reading the script over and over again, and then each time I read it, I make notes in the margins, and that's basically any idea or something that pops up in my head that relates to my life or something else to make the character more personal. I'll write it in there, and then ideally what happens if you keep doing that is by the time you actually film the scene, you take your actual script there and it's just got scribbles all over it, and sometimes you're in the middle of a scene and you're kind of in your head, and I just look at the thing and I'm like, oh yeah, like that idea I had, and I'll just try something weird and different, and then suddenly someone will be like, that's horrible, or they'll be like, what's that, and I'm like, I don't know, what about this, and then the scene just goes in a different direction, or you know, you just go back in your lane, and so it's just something to like get me out of my head, and so I just read stuff over and over again because sometimes like things pop up at you. And with something like Miracle Workers, the creator was there every day that we filmed, which is really rare, the writer, so we just had an in-depth discussion with him about it, and this show is kind of loosely based on SNL, so God is almost like Lorne Michaels a little bit. My character would be like the head writer at SNL. And so Yorma, who directed the first two episodes, is from Lonely Island. So he worked on SNL for 5 years or more. Simon did for 5-6 years. So anytime I'd be like, I'm a little bit confused about this, they'd be like, at SNL, this is what this. And I'd be like, oh, that makes sense to me because this is a made up world. So they'd be like, oh, at SNL. Oh, gotcha. So that would kind of be like this moment here. Okay, gotcha. So it's different for everything. That project, it was great to have, you know, them there. And anytime I was a little bit confused, they'd be like, you know, when the head writer goes up to Lauren and asks in this way, that's how the attitude is. And you're like, oh, I can get that then. Like, I see what I'm trying to do here. So with this project, that was something that was, like, recurring. That was interesting.
You know, Miracle Workers and a lot of the other projects are very much have an element of comedy. Mm-hmm. Do you just like doing comedy, or is there, do you like to do other genres?
Yeah, it's well, first of all, the comedy thing I think has followed me. I didn't think I was funny or anything, but it was that first play that I did in India, which, you know, I was just doing it like, thought I was doing a good drama job or whatever, and they were just laughing at me. So when that started happening, I was like, well, I'm just gonna, I guess, lean into this because it's just coming naturally, so I don't want to like push it away. And now it's something that I really enjoy being in comedies because, one, as cliche as it sounds, it honestly is the best job. I think even better than drama, because if you're having fun in front of the camera, so at work, that means you're doing a great job. So that's, I mean, that's a dream. Like, to just go and like make people laugh at work, and just like the atmosphere is really fun and light, and it's just the best. And so I like that. And then the other aspect of it that I really like is when people kind of come up to you about like comedy stuff. A lot of times they're like, I was going through this weird thing and this thing really helped me, or watching this really made me feel good. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, I like that it's spreading something positive out there. And so I really enjoy doing them. I've done like drama here and there, and I like doing that too. But if I had to pick one, I would definitely pick the fact that I prefer comedy. Yeah.
I mean, definitely, I'm sure on set there's sometimes where you have to like hold in the laughter, and then it's like, all right, and cut. And then everyone's able to just... Whew.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at doing that, but then once in a while I'll work with someone, like I just did this movie with Tiffany Haddish, and I think she is truly like one of the funniest people.
She's hilarious.
And it was really hard to not, just because she's just was really funny. But normally I pride myself on not breaking, because it's ruining a take kind of. But yeah, there was like a day on this movie that was me and Rose Byrne, and honestly, this thing should have taken like 2 hours to film, and it took like 6 hours. And it was just Tiffany doing this stuff, and we on me and Rose would just make eye contact, and it would just lose it. And but luckily they didn't get mad at us, but it was getting to the point that was getting a little annoying how much we were laughing. But usually I'm pretty good about that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, even hearing you say, I'm sure for yourself, of thinking like, I just did something with Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah.
I did something with Ryan Reynolds. I did something with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah.
How have your dreams of, like, what you want to work on, what you want to accomplish in acting, how have they changed over the past 7 years since you started, when it was like, oh, I'll take any?
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Thing.
Right.
To now you're doing that, and like you're setting your sights to something else.
Yeah, I'm actually just turned 30 this year, so I'm thinking more about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. In my 20s, I was very much like what you said. I just wanted to work as much as possible just because I wanted to learn as much and then get a gauge of what I liked and what I didn't like. So, like, tried everything. Mm-hmm. And then now the thing that excites me most of all is just who I get to work with, because the hours are really long and it's just really cool to get to work with these people who are so kind of made for this. Mm-hmm. So all these projects, I've gotten to work with all these people. That was kind of a big draw of being in something like that, is just to, what is it like to work with Tiffany Haddish and share a screen with her and all that kind of stuff. And so that's always like a really exciting thing. But as I'm doing it more and more, I'm writing my own stuff as well, and I'm excited to like work more on getting that stuff made. And with that stuff, it's more Indian based stories versus like a lot of these things. It's great, but I was just an actor that was cast in like a part because I came in to audition and they liked me or whatever, and versus like a specifically Indian story or something like that, which is what I'm excited to kind of work on myself.
I feel like acting more than anything else is a long game, because you never know. I mean, how something could play out.
Yeah.
you're waiting for that role and you're building your credit and you're building that foundation.
Yeah.
Do you see it that way? You're playing the long game, and it's not like, well, didn't get a big part this year. Like, oh.
Yeah, you kind of have to do that, I think, because it can be pretty, otherwise it can be pretty depressing. because it's also hard because you're living in LA, at least, which is where I live, you're just constantly surrounded by other people's success also. Mm-hmm. So a lot of billboards I drive by, I'm like, oh yeah, I was up for that, or I auditioned 5 times for that movie, and now I have to see a billboard in front of my house of this movie that I didn't get. So you just have to keep kind of reminding yourself that whatever you got, and you should be, you know, kind of, that was the one that was meant to happen.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, there's a reason that you didn't get.
Yeah, and so that's always, and I think what helps is like the more, as the years have gone on, luckily I've just kept working, so it's always nice when I'm like, oh, I have 5 movies or these many things that I've made that are coming out, and so I feel, you know, like at ease. But there's every moment when I'm like, am I doing enough? What am I doing? And should I quit? I still have that all the time.
You still have that.
Yeah, especially now that I'm 30, which is not, I know, that old, but I just weirdly, I'm like, am I still doing this? Okay, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm still doing it. Yeah. I have to like remind myself.
Is it usually that short of a conversation?
No. No, it is it's not like a whole day thing, but I do sometimes have like, it's when I'm sitting in traffic sometimes, mm-hmm. and I've just been told that I didn't get something that I really wanted, or that it went to someone else without them auditioning or something, that I'm like, okay, this is a little bit, it's coming back, the feelings are coming back. But yeah, so far I have no plans of quitting, so.
That's good, because you're good at what you do.
Thank you.
What drives you now of like looking at being like, this is my motivation?
Yeah, what drives me is actually something that changed after Deadpool, to be honest, because when we made that movie, like, no one really thought it was going to be that successful, I mean, at all. Like, they didn't really spend a lot of money on it, all this stuff.
And so then, running joke partly in the movie.
Yeah,
which is hilarious.
I mean, they really didn't give us any money. So so that, when that became like this big thing or whatever, out of the woodwork, kind of a lot of like Indian people started reaching out to me from India and from all over the world, and about how excited they were to see someone like them in like a big movie or something. So now a lot of the motivation I have is just honestly to make sure that they're proud of whatever stuff that I do, because they're just like paying attention to it now. So I feel like, you know, always like I'll ask myself that question, like, is this something that, you know, they'd be like, oh cool, like he took that job, like that's a good one or whatever. So that's something that I'm, you know, to open that door for anyone else who wants to do this or whatever, to see someone in like these things. It's like a big motivation.
Did you ever think Bollywood?
No, because Bollywood, because I grew up only watching Bollywood, I didn't really watch any Hollywood, and Bollywood is very different from Hollywood. It's very nepotism based. Mm-hmm. Every actor's son or daughter becomes an actor and gets offered a giant studio movie to start, and it's very much like it's very hard to break in unless you are someone from like a big movie family, and it's kind of very much like that. So I never even thought it was a possibility at all to kind of do that. And I love working in TV here. I think TV is like awesome. And for a working actor, it's such a steady job. And TV in India is almost all soap operas and reality TV. There's no single camera comedy or drama or anything. It's just all soap operas and they air during prime time.
You could be on like the OC for India.
Yeah, but the OC, it's not a soap opera. I mean, it's like straight up there like telenovelas. Okay? So I really don't think I could do that. But yeah, maybe I really do want to work in India, like film a Hollywood movie there, because it's like, you know, where I spend most of my life. But the opportunity hasn't come yet. But that's something that definitely is on the bucket list to like, because now I love this job so much. I would love to see what it's like doing it over there, like work with the Indian crew and all that kind of stuff, and just even see that many Indian people on a set. I've never can't imagine it because it's not what it's like now. So that would be cool. But yeah, not Bollywood specifically. Yeah.
Who did you look up to? Who do you still look up to in the industry of actors?
Well, I mean, to be honest, when I was in India, the only actor was Cal Penn that I knew of. And I mean, there was no one else. I came here when I was in 2007 to go to college. And I specifically remember a poster of Aziz Ansari in the Quad because he was about to host the MTV Movie Awards or something. And there was a poster of him, and I honestly was shocked because I'm like, there's another person.
Who is this other?
I honestly was like, who is this? And so I didn't really have, you know, very many people to kind of look up to, which that's changed so much, which is so cool. But so that was kind of the only person that I knew that was in Hollywood. But now I look up to Steve Carell is one of my favorite people because I feel like he kind of does a little bit of everything. And also from everyone that I've heard of, like has a reputation of just kind of being like the nicest, kindest person, which I'm like a big fan of all that stuff. So so yeah, I just love how he kind of can go into any genre and everyone believes him and it's fine and he can do whatever he wants. And so, yeah, he's someone that I'm like dying to work with. And I just think he's like so cool.
Have you met him or Cal or Aziz?
I have met Aziz and Cal. Penn and I maybe like spoke on Twitter or Instagram or something, but we've never met. But we're actually on an animated show now together for Disney Channel that has like an all brown cast, which comes out in 2020. And he's one of the regulars. I'm like a guest recurring person on it, but we never record together. But I'm hoping that when there's a premiere or something,
there's got to be a carpet or something.
Yeah, in 2020 that I'll get to meet him. But yeah, that I have and I've never met Steve Carell. But yeah.
Someday. What advice do you have for the young people out there, or people who are, whether you're young or old or just starting, you know, trying to break into the industry, or, you know, realizing that, you know, your parents might want you to do one thing, you want to do something else, or just the difficult journey. What advice do you have?
So honestly, I don't have a lot of advice on the parents thing, because if mine were not supportive, I honestly think I was too much of a wimp to have gone against their will. So I think someone else should answer that who did that. But in terms of the other thing, I would just say in the beginning, especially, just kind of say yes to as many things as you can, as long as you're being safe and it's like, you know, all that stuff is taken care of. But like, don't say no to opportunities because you're not going to really get paid to act for a long time. So it's just kind of good to just do it as much as you can and get as much practice as you can. And that way you kind of learn, like, you know, your stuff. And later in your career, as you keep going, you have to say no kind of a lot more because the stakes are different. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't just take every job and suddenly you think you have a career. So you're going to have so much time to say no to things like later on that in the beginning, you really just enjoy the fact that there is no kind of attachments. There is no awareness of who you are. There's no career to speak of. So you can just kind of play and like have fun and just do kind of everything. So
be exhausted.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And you never know, like, who you're working with, like, what they'll end up doing or whatever. So the more you kind of say yes, and the thing is, like, yeah, as you keep going, like, the more successful you get, the more you have to be convinced to say yes to something. So you're going to have so much time to, like, say no to stuff later that I think it's good to kind of play around as much as you can in the beginning.
My final question, which is the question that I love asking to people, is take your life and look 40, 50, 60, 70 years in the future. And people are watching your projects and saying, oh, man, like, yeah, I loved Karan. He was great. Oh, man. What do you want people to say about your work and about your life? Like, one or two things that they look back and they're like, oh, yeah, he was blank. He was blank.
Interesting. That's really hard. I would just say that for me, it's just that they, whatever they see, like, made them happy in some way. Like, that's just my kind of biggest thing, is like it made them like laugh or happy in any kind of way and made them kind of feel good. I'm all about like spreading kind of niceness or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that would be like a big thing. Like if anything, like they watched it and they were just like, oh, I had like have a smile on their face. That would be great.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's what this show is all about. So I appreciate you coming on and joining us.
Thanks.
Guys, thank you, everyone who's watching, guys who are listening. Again, we are available every Monday here live on the Popcorn Talk. And we are also available wherever you get your podcasts. You can find that. Be able to just spread some motivation, spread some information. Because, again, that person that you're putting up there on the top of the totem pole, they were you. They were you once. They were struggling. They were hitting their head against the wall trying to figure out how they're going to break through. And guess what? The only thing that separates them and you, they kept going. So you can keep going to accomplish your dreams, accomplish that thing that's in front of you that maybe is a challenge. And that's all it is. Again, you can reach out and follow Karin on social media at It's Karin Sony. You can follow me at The Only MC. Again, we're grateful to be here on The Popcorn Talk, at The Popcorn Talk on Instagram and on Twitter. And of course, check out Miracle Workers every single Tuesday. This show, I'm telling you, this show is hilarious. It's fantastic. I enjoy it. I know you're going to enjoy it too. We have so many more amazing guests coming up. Season 5. It's incredible. We are just getting started. Until next time, we'll see you then.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
Views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.